Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders. I'm your host, Kyle, and today's guest is a full-time trader and licensed psychotherapist, Sean Sawyer. Sean works not just with traders, but also musicians, athletes, and executives. And if you'd like to learn more, you can go check out soundperformancepsychology.com. If anybody listening has any suggestions, corrections, or questions for future guests, you can send them to us via email at bandoftraderspodcast@gmail.com. Or you can join our free Discord server, or even just DM us on Twitter at financialinept1. We'll have all those links in the episode description, so you can check them out at your own convenience. I think now it's time to get to know our guest here. How you doing today, Sean?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
I heard you're not feeling too well, so I want to say thanks for powering through.
No problem.
Tell me, how long have you been studying psychology? Because I think it said on your website since like 2003?
I started in the business in 2003. But I knew, you know, I kind of knew what I was going to do by my mid-teens. I had a feeling this is what I was going to do.
No, lucky.
And yeah, I know. It's such a, more and more I realize how lucky I am that I knew. But yeah, I've been, finished grad school in 2003. And then you kind of go in and do some postgraduate supervision for a few years. And then, you know, you can bill insurance companies and all that jazz. Your diagnosis becomes legal, all that stuff. And then, you know, I've been practicing for 21 years. In 2016, I went back into private practice. I had done a private practice on the side earlier, only because I was doing trauma work exclusively and I needed some variety. But then I got sick of working for the man, quit.
Tale as old as time.
Exactly. And you know, trading had a fair amount to do with it because I was, you know, I was looking around at some colleagues. And I'm looking at people in their 50s and 60s, and I was, you know, a few years short of 40 at the time. And I'm thinking, I don't want to be, these guys are renting. These guys are in trouble financially. I don't want to do this. I need to do something else or do something additional or whatever. And then marijuana got listed on the stock market, and I thought it was kind of hilarious in certain ways.
I own Cresco Labs.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time in my youth learning the ins and outs of the product.
I was a late bloomer.
And I had stopped for so long because of my career. And you can lose your license to practice and all that stuff before it got legalized. So I found it fascinating and it got me into trading. And I had like kind of a stereotypical story where I caught one of the first CBD plays.
Yeah.
Okay. Remember when CBD drinks became pump and dumps? Of like the OTC. It was India something company, and they ran from like a buck to 17 bucks or something. And I was this is so easy. You know, it was literally one of my first five trades.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
So let me ask you then, did that trade set you back or did that get you started?
It got me started.
Because a lot of times those early wins can actually cause a lot more trouble down the road.
Oh, they did. They did that. Okay. They did that. But they hooked me.
Yeah, yeah.
They hooked me. I was like, this is fun. This is interesting. This is, you know, I thought it, of course, thought it was going to be easier than it really is.
I think we all did.
Yeah, absolutely. And then because I was in private practice and I could do what I wanted, I started to book my clients at slow market times.
Smart.
And in the evening.
Yeah.
So I wasn't tempted to trade during bad times to trade. And more and more, I pared down my private practice and traded more. And then I got into trading psychology because I thought, why am I not doing this? And frankly, the reason I got into it was because I was doing something so stupid psychologically. I had a tragedy in my life and I was sort of trading to avoid it. And it all dawned on me like, oh, trading is functioning to help me avoid right now. It doesn't matter that I'm losing money. Losing money feels better than thinking about my best friend since I was in junior high being dead right now. Because that's what happened.
Wow.
And it all just hit me like a ton of bricks. This is a couple years before the pandemic, and I'm like, why aren't I using what I know? Why aren't I using my skills and whatnot? And then I just started applying it to myself more, and then sound performance psychology was born from that.
I got to ask, is it harder to apply the stuff you've learned about psychology to yourself? Like, it seems like it'd be difficult. Like, most psychologists seem to have their own psychologist, right?
We all, yes. Any good therapist gets therapy. Mm-hmm. And if you have a therapist that doesn't get therapy, go see someone else.
Why is that? Just out of curiosity.
Because they're kidding themselves. You don't want a therapist who's kidding themselves.
Kind of a humility type thing.
It's humility. It's perspective. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a very taxing job in an unusual way. You know, no one comes to see you because things are great.
That's a good point.
No one ever. Yeah. No one's ever come to see me to tell me how wonderful life is.
Right.
And I was a trauma specialist, so it was particularly heinous, yeah. You know, from combat to, you know, all forms of abuse and incest and whatnot. So assaults and all that jazz. Oof. So it became something that if you don't have someone to process things with or whatever, it's going to take its toll. Now, that is built into the profession. We do clinical supervision. You know, we meet, we talk about people and make sure we're on the right track and all that stuff. But yeah, you should definitely get therapy yourself. And it is a little hard. I mean, you can't totally apply to yourself because you're not going to be objective. However,
that is the hard thing there. Yeah.
That's the objectivity is impossible.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to the trading psych stuff, you know, there's certain things I can apply to myself because a lot of it's behavioral and a lot of my interventions are behavioral and it's about regulating the nervous system and things like that. So I can participate in those. And because I talk about it constantly with my individual clients and with my workshops,
reinforcing,
I browbeat myself with it. Right. Basically.
It becomes one of those things where if you're not doing the things you're telling everybody, it becomes that much harder to not do them, you know, almost.
It does. And I'll tell you what, it shows. Mm-hmm. And two, there is nothing, because I'm not going to lie, I discovered this. There's nothing harder in my profession anyways. There's nothing harder than having a terrible day trading and doing dumb stuff and then turning around and talking to people about trading psychology.
Yeah.
You know, aside from like the you know, I don't know if it's really hypocritical or not. I mean, we're all human, but it became such an incentive to trade better so that my evenings, when I do start seeing my clients or in the midday or whatever, that those became
more pleasant, probably more pleasant,
less stressful because if I had a bad day, it was just amplified because I didn't want to talk about trading, you know?
I know I've had like, it's hard scheduling these interviews because I usually do them around lunchtime because it's like the slowest time in the markets. But if I have a shitty morning, like, man, sometimes I'm just hoping that guest cancels because I just don't really feel like talking about trading right now.
Right?
Yeah.
It's so true. And that's one of the best incentives to doing this. I really love what I do. It's fun. I realized when I got down and was really not working much and mostly trading that I didn't enjoy. I wasn't as satisfied with life as much.
Yeah.
So it's really nice to have the mixture.
You need both.
I do.
Yeah.
I you know, there's if I got rich.
There's something fulfilling that you get from helping somebody else through trying times that you don't get from navigating them yourself in the stock market, right?
Yeah, there is. And, you know, there's the old like, oh, I like to help people. and that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm definitely a, you know, like a self-sacrificer, but I just also find people fascinating.
Yeah.
And that was always a driver as much as like, there's this altruistic do-gooder. Oh, I like to help people. I just found people fascinating and I have met a huge variety of humans in my life. I've had a huge amount of intimate relationships, a very specific type of intimate relationship. And it just gives you so much perspective and insight on things. And then now working with traders, that's been different too, because, you know, I'm in the Northeast and now I would say the majority of my clientele is in Texas and a little bit in the Midwest and then random here and there, a lot in Australia for some reason. I'm popular there.
You probably should get you set up with Phil Muscatello. He might like talking to you then.
Absolutely. So working with traders, it's very different too. Mm-hmm. You know, almost everyone's type A or perfectionistic.
Perfectionistic. Yeah,
okay. Or has what I call unrelenting standards is a more accurate term than perfectionism. Unrelenting, I think.
That's a good phrase.
And it's really the verb of perfectionism, unrelenting standards. Man, I think it makes a lot of sense. And I'm stealing that from a guy named Jeff Young. It's not my.
I appreciate that about
original work there. I really have an issue when people start to just pretend they've made all this stuff up.
It's like, one thing if you don't know that it's been done before, but
yeah, my workshop materials have citations. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous when people claim they created this thing. It's like, no, especially because other professionals are going to know.
I know
where it comes from. We've all heard it before,
right?
Well, anyways,
they're not advertising to them though.
Yeah. touche. Exactly. So just working with traders has been another unique experience and been really fun to get to know different types of people and, different values, different, you know, perspectives than mine. And it's always interesting to find that common ground. And especially now, just where we're in such a divisive country, it's been interesting to work with the people and be able to see that consistently.
No, you can't really talk. I was going to ask if how many of your clients are on the one edge of the extreme on one side or the other, but you probably can't talk about that kind of stuff.
So in terms of talking about clients, so, you know, I'm practicing as a coach.
Yeah. Okay.
So it does loosen up. That being said, I pretty much stick with HIPAA.
Yeah.
But as long as you're not giving out what they call identifying information, you can refer to it. So most of my clients are more on the, you know, the right side than the left side for sure.
I was just curious if they're more in the middle, like the majority of people I've met, like you got the vocal 10% on either end.
Correct.
That seems to get most of the attention and it feels divisive, but that's just because we're not listening to the 80% that are sitting in the middle saying, what the fuck is going on?
It's really wild how we've empowered the fringe.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fair to say most are, yeah, I guess middle, right.
Yeah.
Middle. But and most of the time it never comes up except, you know, obviously this past week has been pretty wild with
right. Anyway, I don't want to get too much into that. I do want to ask though, how did you get introduced into trading? Was it somebody that you were working with? A friend?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh my God. I almost forgot that part because it was one of the receptionists and she showed me what's that app? What's the one that
Robinhood?
Was all sketch? Yes.
Yeah.
And she showed me something she was doing and she was all excited. She made some money. I'm like, huh, interesting. I started Googling. I'm like, wait a second. Weed is in the stock market. So it was that combination of those two things. And I just thought it was interesting. And it all blossomed from there.
That's you, because you're not the first psychologist turned trader that I met. Rich Friesen was one of the first guests that we've ever had. He's a psychologist / trader. Used to trade the pits in San Francisco. I'm surprised that there's not more, like you don't hear about more of them.
You know, I think we're rare ducks because the nature of the personality type that goes into the profession.
Mm-hmm.
Like people think I'm nuts. My colleagues are like, you do what now? You work with who now? They're like, why is your website down? Why don't you? And I'm like, oh, I have a different business now, or I'm doing this now. And
right.
You know, it, frankly, they're a little judgmental of it. You know, I think there's a lot of self-righteousness in my profession.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of sanctimony. And, you know, it's kind of like, oh, you're helping who? And it's like, I don't care. I'll help whoever wants to help.
Anybody who's asking for it.
Like, get off your high horse, man.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Whoever's willing to be vulnerable and do the work, like, rock on. So I think that's a piece of the puzzle is that personality type. The same reason, you know, how certain types get into institutional trading or certain types get into the professional side that we don't see, you know, retail, we see a wider variety of personality types because you don't have to be that as aggressive or as what a lot of people call alpha or whatever to be a home trader.
Yeah. And there's there's no real barrier to entry anymore.
That now too, especially with these props, with these online props.
Now, I'm actually really curious because you don't just work with traders. You also work with I think it said musicians, executives and athletes.
Mostly my partner works with athletes.
Okay.
Nia Sterling. She does most of that. I got in early a few years ago. I got in working with some classical musicians, and then it's always a word of mouth thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a word of mouth thing where, you know, a couple people do well and they tell their friends. So I ended up working with a lot of classical musicians, and that's been steady. And then the executives dates back to my private practice back in 2010 when I used to collaborate with my father, actually, who was a consultant for various basically a communication consultant in the business world. And okay. I'd work with some of his clients and we would do EMDR and for helping them with performance, you know, a lot of times around public speaking anxiety or anxiety in meetings. Mm. And it all kind of blossomed from there. So it was natural to start working with traders. Very different fields, obviously, but
yeah,
performance is performance.
Well, I wanted to ask about some of the similarities you see between those different professions and traders. Like, do they kind of struggle with the same types of things? Or are there similar exercises that help them succeed?
Well, that's a good question. So traders are definitely different.
That's putting it mildly.
I mean, think about it. We're all, like, all of us are choosing basically the toughest job in the world. I mean, the job with one of the lowest success rates in the world. So it's that says something.
Yeah, there's got to be some self-belief or arrogance to even, like, step foot in that arena, right?
Or desperation.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Or desperation. So that's different. But parallels between them two would there's a lot of type A. The classical musicians, there's a lot of that unrelenting standards I mentioned. Mm-hmm. And because there's such musicianship is so precise when it comes to that type of musicianship. And that's primarily the musicians I worked with. They're all classical. Mm-hmm. And the precision, the perfection, the working with a team requires so much. And there's so much pressure to perform by your peers immediately sitting next to you. There's where it starts to differ. Because it activates different issues in people because their performance is live in front of everybody. As traders, we can hide.
Yeah.
We can hide our shame. We can hide our losses. We can reset prop accounts or whatever it is we do.
I think that actually hurts us more.
It kills. It's terrible. Yes, precise. Huge problem.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, like having the conversations after trading, like encourage you to trade better. Yep. Like anytime I've ever streamed live with other people and I'm trading live with them, like I've always traded the best I've ever traded in those scenarios because there's,
yes,
you don't want to eat shit on TV.
Exactly.
Or, you know.
Exactly. And one intervention I like to use a lot is trying to sort of raise that type of consciousness. What do you think it is about, if you don't mind me turning this script for a second?
Please.
Why do you suppose it is you perform better when you're trading with people live?
It's the added pressure or the fear of doing poorly and being judged, I think is what it kind of stems from.
So you're looking to avoid being judged. So that might be avoiding shame, avoiding embarrassment, avoiding something like that.
Shame, embarrassment, yeah.
One of my primary interventions comes from existential psychology, and it's about using people's values and kind of forcing them to be very, very conscious of them while they're trading. Mm-hmm. And that's what I call the higher psychological timeframes, because as traders, we, you know, even if we're scalping, we still know the higher timeframes. We know what the daily looks like. You know, we know the 4-hour, we know the weekly, the monthly candle. And so that shame that you're conscious of that acutely in that situation is because you don't want to, you know, appear a certain way. You don't want to be judged. There's something you care about. There's some level of self-respect. There's something
self-image that I don't want to. Yes.
So leveraging that stuff,
mm-hmm,
to build an internal risk manager is one of the interventions that's really useful. Now there's some barriers in the way of that for most people, but it does work. And then that includes things like we're talking about now, including things like, you know, when you go to trade, being conscious of, you know, not only how am I going to come out of this, how am I going to feel tonight when my head hits the pillow, what's my husband, wife, whoever going to think, but also like, is this trade in the best interest of my kids' college fund? Is this in the best interest of me having choices next year for me and my family? And bringing those things into that moment that help really assess, like, is this trade a high quality enough trade?
Interesting.
And that does motivate behavior change, because values have motivational properties versus goals, mm-hmm, can be as discouraging as they are encouraging.
I'll tell you what I have been doing lately that feels like it's been actually really helping a lot. And that's just like trying to build the awareness of like the emotional side of me. So mm-hmm, when I feel those urges to FOMO, revenge, or take a trade that's not quite the best, I make a note of it on the chart, like little line to the candle.
Oh, that's great.
Felt some FOMO here. And then that does is that kind of breaks me out of that cycle of FOMO click, FOMO click, FOMO click. Mm-hmm. And it also clues me in to start looking now to see if there's a way to validate that feeling. Is that feeling right or is that feeling wrong? Do I have something here I can lean on? Is there a better entry? Do I really want to take this? Maybe not. But that allows me to engage the rational side with the emotional side and try to, you know, have them work together, which is kind of what I've been going for lately.
That's a very smart way to go about it because A, you're practicing self-awareness mm-hmm. by doing that, and like you must be mindful to some extent or whatever to be able to catch yourself.
I would say I probably annotate maybe 10 to 20% of them, but I mean, the goal is okay. obviously to improve. Hey. I've only been doing it for a month or yeah. so.
You might be 10 to 20% ahead of the majority.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You know,
I've learned a lot from that 10 to 20%, so I can't really get too mad at that.
And then when you annotate and you use your, you whether it's you pick up a pen and write down or you start typing or whatever, that pause mm-hmm. and that processing is a left brain, right brain activity. And that's going to, one of the reasons that helps with FOMO is because that behavior, because behavior is really the key yeah. doing, not it's not really about thinking. That behavior helps to soothe the threat mind.
Yes.
It helps to turn the sympathetic or the parasympathetic nervous system back on and calm you down. And that's the root of all that stuff, that FOMO and revenge trading and all that jazz. That's all fight, flight, or freeze stuff.
You kind of mentioned EMDR, and I actually had that on mm-hmm. my notes here. I wanted you to kind of explain what it is, and then maybe if you could talk about like some ways to apply that.
Sure. So think of a short version. On soundperformancepsychology.com, there is a good video that I made that explains it, about a 10-minute video that's worth excellent. Checking out. But essentially, to what you need to know about EMDR is how memory and the brain works first. And that is memories are stored in the brain via sensory data. Essentially, and this is a bit arguable, but there's four categories: behavior, affect, knowledge, and sensations, which basically means imagery, the emotional part, how it feels, and like urges or the behavior involved with whatever happened.
Okay.
So say you had a bad day today, just a general bad day. Mm-hmm. You go to bed tonight, you wake up the next day. Generally speaking, you feel better. It's not because 8 hours passes. It is because in your sleep, your brain, especially during REM, rapid eye movement, because there's a connection coming, because EMDR stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. The memories, they move, they get stored where they're supposed to get stored. They get filed in the proper way that they're supposed to be filed away. Because when memories come in initially, they're in the short-term memory. They're more in the back of your brain, the limbic part of your brain, the reptilian part of your brain. And then they digest and they process and they move through various parts and they end up in your prefrontal cortex, like behind your forehead. And when they're there, the memories are then more accessible when you're stressed, and they're also now contextualized in the duration of your life. So if I have a bad day, if I have a bad day and I go to sleep, it gets processed. All of a sudden it's now filed away with the other 45 years of my life. So what does it matter? It's not a big deal.
Yeah. But when it's in the short-term one, that's just whatever happened today, and it's going to have a much more outsized...
Yeah, so there's science behind sleeping on a big decision.
Yeah, so okay.
Now, what happens when you're chronically stressed mm-hmm. or something straight-up traumatic happens? Now, trauma includes the things people tend to think about, but it also includes big losses financially. It includes major mistakes trading, because finances are one of the bigger threats we face these days. We're not as worried about lions and tigers and bears, right?
I feel like I just listened to a podcast on this.
Really?
I don't know if it was Jordan Harbinger, maybe.
I don't know who that is.
He was just he just did something on memory. I think it was him. Mm. And specifically trauma. And the reason why all those memories are so vivid is because they never get processed and moved into that long-term memory.
That's exactly
is that correct?
Right. That's precise.
Okay. I'll find a link and link it.
I would love that. So, so those memories... This is where I was going next, is when trauma happens or chronic stress happens, you don't get REM sleep. You don't go through the same processes during sleep because of adrenalines that get released out of your spine and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And that can happen for a night, or that can happen for months or years, you know. Yeah. And the unprocessed memories, like you just said, because they're in short-term memory, they're very vivid. The brain has no space-time continuum back there. It does not matter when they actually happened. when they get activated, they just happened. That's what your brain thinks. That is why, you know, a guy driving down the street, the modern thing with vets is, you know, a pile of trash on the side of the road is very triggering because of IEDs. They'll start to get really stressed, or they'll start to flash back or whatever because of these memories that are unprocessed, that are trauma back there. Then it causes problems, right?
Yeah, especially if you're driving. Jeez.
Yeah, it's bad news, and that's true of, you know, any other trauma you can think of.
Yeah.
So there's these little reminders, but throw in trading. You know, when things start to go a little sideways, or you know, you're sizing into something, or swing goes, it starts going against you. All of a sudden, you can start flashing back to that huge loss,
right?
Or start flashing back to, how'd your wife take it when you did that and you didn't tell her until there was 50 G's gone, or whatever it might be. You know, how'd you feel, you know, when you did this and then you had to go to your kid's soccer game and you're like, oh my God, how am I going to put him through college? I just lost some, whatever it is. So that's more the trading trauma. And what EMDR does is through some very specific techniques, and you literally reprocess the memory the same way that it would happen during REM sleep naturally, but you do it in a session. You do it with eye movements or some form of bilateral stimulation. I do it a lot with traders. I still have a small regular private practice. So I still do it quite a bit there. It's a fantastic intervention. A lot of data behind it. It's very odd. It's an unusual thing. When it came out, it was very controversial. But there's just piles of data, and there's militaries out there that require their soldiers to get it.
Really?
Because it is so effective. Yeah.
Yeah, I got the link for your video there. I'll make sure that's in the show notes. You can check that out. Damn, I wish I'd watched that earlier. I probably had some better questions. But that's all right. I did see another one on there, the clear mindset. If you want to kind of talk me through that, what that is.
Sure. So the clear mindset, it's I'm glad you asked about that. I just started a blog about it.
Okay.
Because it's a really important approach, and what it stands for is connect, loosen, embody, accept, respond. That's the acronym.
Accept. Everyone, most people seem to skip that accept stage.
Accept is hard.
It is, isn't
accept
it?
Accept is so hard. Accepting when a trade is over.
Accepting the loss on the day.
Accepting when a trade's not there. I mean, we are fighting. It's fighting reality, not acceptance. And we fight reality like it's our job.
It is. I mean, kind of.
So it's an approach I use. So the connect piece, you know, it's about mindfulness and self-awareness and the practical application of those. I mean, people, I think, sometimes have a woo-woo perspective on mindfulness. So they think it's some spiritual thing, and it can be. But, you know, there's tons of data. Mindfulness makes your anterior cingulate in your brain thicker and denser. I mean, literally, it's wild. It's a fantastic intervention. It has so many health benefits. It's a great tool, and it builds self-awareness and emotional intelligence. And what trader doesn't need more self-awareness and emotional intelligence? And also, this clear mindset stuff, right now the blog is definitely more aimed towards traders, but for any high performance activity, who doesn't need that? Who doesn't need to be more in the moment? You know, but people talk about flow, athletes talk about all that stuff. I mean, that's being in the present. That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's all it is. Yeah. And if you've ever, and most people have experienced it, they just don't label it as such. For example, if you've ever experienced time flies while you're having fun, congratulations. Yeah. There's you're mindful.
Coding was the example I used to always use whenever I used to get into like a good rhythm, like writing a new lines of code. Like it just feels like there's nothing but you in screen. It's great.
Fun. Yeah. This blog, part of the reason I'm glad you asked, I've been geeking out writing it. It's been so much fun. And there's been nights where I'm like, oh, it's 3 a.m. I should probably go to sleep now.
Oh, you got a ton of stuff on here too. Yeah. I'll make sure I link this one.
So it's about that, you know, loosen is about a different approach. I think that's one of the more important ones, the loosen point. So the way I have it written out is loosen your attachment to thoughts and emotions, cultivate mental clarity and resilience. And
what do you mean by that? Loosen your attachments to your thoughts.
Yeah. So old psychology, dated stuff that unfortunately gets taught way too often. And unfortunately, a lot of trait psych is based on it. A lot of it still has it in there. The old school thought was challenge your thought.
Okay.
You have a negative thought about yourself, fight it. Give 10 reasons why it's wrong. You know, positive self-talk. And there's a place for that. Don't get me wrong. Short term, there's good data on that. Long term, it actually makes you worse.
Interesting.
And that's because of something called relational frame theory. And the reason is, so if I have the thought, I'm a shithead, I'm a freaking loser, And then I break out my list. Oh, I did it again. I'm going to break out my list of things I love about myself or whatever's good. And I start reading it. What happens is the things on the list start to get neurologically linked with I'm a fucking idiot.
Oh.
So they just trigger it. They all become the same thing.
So now what if instead of like fighting it like that, what about just asking that voice? Is that true?
That is exactly where I'm going.
Okay.
It, very similar. I mean, asking is way better than telling.
Yes.
And I swear this was not intended. I literally, one of the articles I just wrote this week was ask yourself, don't tell yourself. Because it's the difference. These people, you know, people want to be like, I'm the best trader in the world. You're going to crush it this morning. Blah, blah, blah. That's terrible advice. It actually has almost the opposite of, I shouldn't say it's terrible advice. Research says it is not the greatest of advice, and it will often have an opposite effect. Because for the similar reasons what I'm about to say, so the loosen thing, the point you were getting at is, I want to do something like, oh, I'm noticing the thought that I'm a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
I'm noticing my mind is telling me that I'm a fucking idiot. I'm noticing my shame is coming to surface during trading. Hey, what's up, shame? We're going to go and we're going to trade together. I'm not going to fight it. I'm not going to try to bury it. I'm not going to lie to myself. I'm not going to pretend I don't have it. I'm going to work with what I've got. I'm going to accept.
Accept, yes.
And that's the difference between modern psychology and this stuff that still gets taught, unfortunately. And that stuff isn't useless, but it's short-term good, long-term makes things worse. So it's very tricky, and I'm pretty passionate about that one, as you might be able to tell. I tend to have a little pet peeve or gripes about things, unfortunately. The embody part is about what I was talking about before, is just, you know, using your values to help manage risk.
That's something I've struggled with, the core values, is just trying to identify what they are. So do you have any suggestions for exercises for people to like help identify those?
I do. I would think about what pisses you off. Okay. Is a good start. Think about what excites you. Uh-huh. Is another good way to go. Think about what has been a part of your life.
Like the constants?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. For a long time. It's what do you enjoy?
Mm-hmm.
What are you grateful for? What relationships do you value the most? And then for all of those, it's why. You know, why do you care about it? Why do you hang out with these people? Why do you go to church? Why are you infuriated by something? Yeah. Why does this thing make you happy, sad? Those will start to give you clues. And
okay.
And the general categories that I use are it's like, you know, family, health and wellness, recreation, spirituality, community, sort of broad categories. Because
where would you put rational thought?
Health.
Okay. Health.
Yeah.
That's definitely one of mine.
Yeah. That's a good one. And they all have the ability. You can serve all of them, even if you don't meet your goals, which is important.
Okay.
So if your goal is to make $1,000 a day trading and you don't make it, you can still serve all your values and leave that day with a sense of purpose and clarity and not beating the shit out of yourself and not having those, you know, it reduces the probability of those, like those cycles we all go through. We're doing really well. And then it all crashes down. Why? Because you weren't paying attention the whole time you were doing well.
Right.
You know, so.
We hate targets around here too.
Oh, good.
Yeah, exactly what you just mentioned there.
They're terrible.
Who are you to tell the market what you're going to take today?
And it's super, it's pretty arrogant.
Yeah.
It really is.
But there's only, the only things you can control are your own process and how you react. And like trying to shift the focus to that has been difficult, but I think I finally started to make some headway on that. That's another exercise that I was given from Andrew in the episode, I think, that was published last week. Like I start the day now with like, who am I going to be today? And then I have some things that I write out. Like, so this, for example, this morning I wrote out patient. I'll take no trades before the 15-minute OR. Number two is responsible. I honor my daily drawdowns. Number three is balanced. I'm aware of rational emotional thoughts. I do that by making notes on the charts. And then fourth was brave. Don't let fear stop me from entering my trades.
Why do you care about being patient, brave? Well, let's start with those. Why do you care?
Well, the first three I started with was patient, responsible, balance. Those are the ones that I identified as traits that I want to embody as a trader, like the ideal trader. Like those are the three things that stood out most to me. Brave, I added yesterday, I think. because that was something that I found fear, like, kind of keeping me from taking some entries that would have worked out really well. So I thought, you know what, today I'm not going to be afraid. And from what I think is exactly what Andrew said to do, I mean, I put on a couple of spots on the charts on entries I took, like, at least I'm not a chicken when the stop got hit, because now I can celebrate. Hey, I did the thing I was going to do. I said I was going to be brave today, and I was. It doesn't matter that I, you know, didn't necessarily get the result I wanted.
Exactly.
I embodied the behavior that I wanted to be.
Yeah. And those things are tied to something you care about. There's a reason you care about those things. And that's what I would, that's what the only thing I would add, or encourage you to think about as well.
Okay.
It's like, why do those matter? Why do you care?
The patient one came about because I noticed that when I trade impulsively, it's like I didn't have enough time in front of the screen yet to kind of piece together what's going on in the market. Mm-hmm. I was just acting impulsively. So I started with that one as kind of my gauge. It gives me a chance to look over the past 15 minutes since the open. Am I making notes or am I not making notes? If I'm not making notes, then I'm definitely not balanced. So I don't need to be trading anymore. So it's kind of I think it's more of like a benchmark for me. There's also something to keep me from getting into that cycle of emotion, react.
Why do you care about the cycle of emotion, react, and not being in it?
Because it doesn't feel good when I look back on it at the end of the day. Those are the days that I do poorly, and those are the days that I hate my trading.
So there's health. Does it affect your personal life?
It used to, but now I do a much better job since I've actually started learning about myself and psychology, of talking through all this stuff with my wife. So she knows, like, hey, I had a good day. This is why I had a bad day. This is why.
So relationships are one of your values too. And your marriage.
I would say yes. Yes.
Your marriage is part of why you want to be patient is what I'm hearing.
Interesting.
Your marriage is part of why you want to do those things, because you want to have a better night with your wife.
Oh.
And that, bringing that into the mix intraday, like, put that on your, put that in on a post-it note next to your computer or whatever. Think about her face.
Mm-hmm.
Think about why you fell in love with her. And I know I'm getting a little therapisty here, but those things
that make you feel good. Yeah.
Those are the psychological higher timeframes we ignore as traders, and we need to stop ignoring.
Yeah.
Because we would never, you're not going to, even if you're scalping, you're not going to ignore the 4 hour. You're not going to ignore the daily trend. You're not going to ignore the hourly, certainly. So why ignore the psychological versions of that?
Yeah.
You know, and it's so important to bring those in, because they will affect your behavior. It's like if your wife was standing over your shoulders, you traded, you would trade different the same way you'd trade different when you're live.
Yeah.
And the one thing about our human brains is, unlike any other mammal, we can be reactive to our thoughts. We can freak ourselves out by just thinking something. So, that's kind of the negative side, but let's leverage it to our advantage, and let's be accountable as if our wife was over our shoulder. Would we take this trade? Would we buy that extra contract?
Right.
Maybe not. And maybe that's better in the long run. And maybe that makes me feel better when my head hits the pillow, or maybe that makes me feel better when I get to talk to her at dinner or whatever.
Right. Right. So now I noticed that you spun that into a positive too. It wasn't think about how disappointed she's going to be if you take this trade. It was the other way around. Was that intentional?
No.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of fear of negative reinforcement, I think. And
I'm a strong believer in aversive stimuli. anybody in my workshop right now could tell you that the first week was kind of a bummer, because we explored some deep stuff.
Yeah.
So it's what works for you. Like, if the negative side is crushing, then absolutely. But also, you do, to me, I think it's important to think about, do I want to disappoint my wife?
Yeah.
Do I want to see that look? Do I want to hear that sigh? Or whatever it is. We all have a thing that, you know, and it's not about her. And I don't mean that as like, use your nagging wife as what, I don't mean that.
No, and it's not even about her. It's a very loving thing.
It's absolutely about you. It is about
me and the way I act.
Correct.
I feel bad for her when she has no idea, you know, in the early days, like, oh, he just went to bed and didn't talk to me. I wonder if I did something wrong. Like, no, it wasn't you. It was me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so all those things will affect decision making. They will affect your executive function. They'll help maintain perspective, because it's not a guarantee, but they will lower the probability of fight, flight, or freeze. They'll lower the probability of your sympathetic nervous system turning on. And then that just Fs everything up, because once that happens, you're in tilt. Your brain's offline. Your frontal cortex is offline, and all your TA knowledge is gone. And that's why when you have those days and the bell rings or a trade ends and you're like, what the F was I thinking?
Taking these trades? Yeah.
Because someone else
it
was.
Wasn't you. Yeah.
Exactly. Your id, if you want to go old school, was taking them.
You said something there. I wanted to clarify it, but I don't remember what it was.
I'm curious, who's the Andrew you're referring to? I feel like I don't know these guys you're talking about today.
Andrew, we've done like the three recent episodes with them. I think we're going to be doing a psychology one with them.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's a lot more focused on like parts work type stuff.
As in internal family systems?
Is that, I don't know how to define it. It's like okay. Like who's my greed? Like who are the key components that make up like the inner me?
Oh, interesting. Is he a psychologist?
He is not. This is all stuff that he spent the last 2 years working on, but it all lines up with a lot of the stuff Rich Friesen has put together. So I've been wanting to put him in with another guy, with either Rich or maybe someone like you to let him bounce some of his ideas off of.
Cool. And
see how much of it overlaps, because a ton of it does.
Yeah, I mean, what you just described sounds familiar, yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you then about deep-seated beliefs. Like, what is a deep-seated belief?
Deep-seated belief is something that is baked in and usually against your will.
Okay, can you give me an example of something?
Sure. I'm a piece of shit.
Can you give a more positive example? I feel bad not saying no. It's not true.
Yeah, so... when we're kids, when we're growing up is when this stuff gets baked in. And frankly, a lot of it's baked in before 5 years old. It's not, and it's very, very rigid, but the long and short of it is whatever is going on in your environment, because of your parents, your caregivers, your socioeconomics, your culture, your neighborhood, your variety of things, you are going to have responses to that the same way anything mm-hmm. responds to their environment. And the reason I used the I'm a POS thing was, you know, if I'm a kid and I'm criticized constantly,
yeah,
or my parents are vocal about me, the disappointment they have, or they're, you know, undermining or something like that. Eventually what kids do is when their parent calls them a name or gets upset with them or tells them they're worthless or something horrible, a day will come where the kid doesn't get upset anymore. And the kid's just like, yeah, I know.
That sounds terrible.
It is. And everyone has some issues like that.
Of it. Yeah.
You know, there's many, many contexts. It can be this kind of shame one. It can be abandonment. It can be, you know, it's like if your parents are drunk and you're, you know, you need their help and they're never there for you. There's one day when you're just like, meh, people aren't reliable, and you just buy it.
Uh-huh.
And or if the only way you get your needs met is by being completely self-sacrificing or people-pleasing, the day will come where you're like, I don't matter. Everyone else does. I'm going to take care of them. And those all manifest in trading in different ways. Mm-hmm. But they become deep-seated because at some point they were adaptive to believe. For that kid to believe he's a POS, it actually is adaptive at that time in that context, which is why I reference my thing as contextual trading psychology. Because in that context, it's better to believe you're a POS because you don't get upset anymore.
Yes.
So you don't spend your days distressed. You just know you're a piece of shit and you go about your business. And I know it sounds awful,
but yeah,
it is exactly. That's why I said against your will, it's perpetrated.
Yeah.
Perpetrated. And that's the difference. And all those things are perpetrated. You know, kids can't escape, or, you know, for mammals, we hold our kids a long time and you can't escape. There's no realistic, you're not running away when you're 13. You're not realistically, you can't run away till you're a decent age. And even then it's still difficult. So you're trapped. And that is a tenet of any trauma, is being trapped, whether it's a car accident, a sexual assault, a trade where you're, you know, you've lost money.
Right.
There's a trap. I don't mean you can't sell out of a trade. I just mean you're trapped in, like, this. This money's gone, and now I have fewer options and choices and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm getting beat up as a kid. You can't move out.
Right.
You got to go home and get beat up, or do whatever you can. Make yourself unimportant. Make yourself invisible so that stuff doesn't happen. But then, as an adult, it starts to manifest, and maybe you don't have enough self-respect to respect your stops or respect your capital. Or you don't mean enough, you know, there's a lot of ways it manifests. I don't mean to get too in the weeds here, but that's the deep-seated belief, are things like that. and they're very rigid. They maintain themselves. They like to maintain the homeostasis, you know, like any organism does. We all do it. Charts revert to their mean, traders revert to their mean. And our mean a lot of times is not that great. It's especially if we didn't have a great childhood.
Yeah.
And even if you did have a pretty good one, there's still something.
Right. I've been noticing lately, and I don't know if this is like midlife crisis age or what's going on, but I've been noticing moments throughout the day that I never noticed before where I just feel like I'm a kid again. Sometimes it's like sitting eating lunch, like I'll catch myself swinging my foot on the stool, and like suddenly I just feel like I'm suddenly transported back and I'm like 6 years old again, trying to remember how to hold a fork. You know?
Like, so it's generally experienced in a positive way?
I don't know. There's some... The reaction to it isn't necessarily positive. Like, the reaction is more like, why am I feeling so childish right now? Like, that I don't think has been necessarily quite as healthy, but it's just something interesting that I'd never noticed before, and I don't know if it's always been there or if it's just something that maybe I'm attuned to now that I've been...
I feel like it's because you're paying more attention.
I think it is.
I would say it is. You know, the you know, audience, get ready to roll your eyes. The inner child. I don't use the inner child framework, but we do. It exists. Yeah. I call it an ego state. We have young ego states, and there's generally four. There's a happy child. There's a vulnerable one. There's an angry one. There's an impulsive one.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the happy one is eating his apple and peanut butter and swinging his legs, right, and he's having a good old time. That's beautiful. You know, the he thinks farts are funny still.
Yeah. You know,
like we gotta, I don't know, maybe you should add that up.
I wish I had a soundboard.
Yeah, we need those things. And the hurt, vulnerable in a sort of more helpless way. Child is also there. The impulse. I mean, kids are impulsive. Pure, you know, nervous system, because they don't have the words to articulate everything just yet. Even you know, they could talk, but they can't. They're not sophisticated about it.
Right.
So it traps things inside, and that's the downside. Is you know, trading completely irresponsibly and oversizing and blowing accounts and blowing money and not being accountable to your family and friends and partner and all that kind of stuff. That's a child's behavior. Yeah. I mean, it's at best teen's behavior.
Right.
And I'm not saying I've never done it, and I'm not trying to be all sanctimonious. It just we all do it, but we have to manage it,
mm-hmm,
and have a relationship with ourselves where we're noticing that stuff. So what you're noticing, I think, is a good sign.
Yeah.
I think it says something about you're building your self-awareness, you're building your insight, and that's just that is never going to hurt you as a trader.
Good. Good. I was getting a little nervous. I thought I might be going backwards in losing time it? Or something. Yeah. There's some of that. There's
gonna be a man in a white coat knocking at your door in about 5 minutes.
I think I turned what, 42 this year, and I was wondering, I don't know if it was earlier this year, maybe it was last year, like, do you ever feel old? Like, do you ever get to a point where you just stop feeling like a kid again? Like, when you talk to your dad, do you ever feel like not a kid when you talk to your father?
Oh yeah. I mean, those are the ones that do it the most. I mean, your parents can, mm-hmm, put you back in a 12-year-old state.
Easy, like instantly. Sometimes it's just a sigh.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. The moment you said I'm 42, mm-hmm, I was like, man, his beard's really black. I'm only 3 years older than him. Look how gray my beard is. I got my first
gray not too long ago in here.
it starts coming.
Yeah, I know.
Like down a mountain.
It makes you feel any better. I'm missing most of my hair up on top.
Yeah, the midlife, I do feel old at times. And I also feel liberated as I get older. To not give an F into...
That's what I'm looking forward to.
You know, it's just, there's so much more freedom. I would say, in generally speaking, I get happier as I get older.
Right, once we get to Biden's age, I think that's when we can start saying what we think. Whenever, right? That's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad is his age.
Okay, last question, I think, before we wrap things up, and this is something we kind of talked about pre-recording that I felt deserved just a few moments here, but
sure.
Like, we're talking a little bit about the stigma that still surrounds psychology and people not wanting to go get help that could obviously benefit from it. Why is there still that stigma there? Does it have to do with just admitting to your the everyone, like if anybody knows I'm going to therapy, then they know I'm not perfect. Is that all self-image stuff or is there something else behind it?
I think that it's a range of things. I think with traders, it's fearing the perception of weakness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very vulnerable, and vulnerable is uncomfortable.
Yes.
Men especially, you know, we'd rather be angry than vulnerable. That's why we get mad instead of sad a lot of times.
Interesting.
Serves a function to protect us.
Huh. You can still act when you're mad and you're sad. Usually it's despair. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and it's also, you know, it may not be as viewed as masculine or whatever. And I think in this realm, there's a fair amount of that. You know, I think that people are even more likely to see or feel safer or less stigmatized if they see someone who like is a coach or whatever, because, you know, it's not, then you're not seeing a therapist. And I think there's that happens.
Yeah.
You know, people, I think they're just more readily open to talk about it. And, you know, I think if you look at even the big players in my world of trading psychology, with the exception of a few legends, Twitter engagement's terrible. I mean, people don't even click like.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's, and I mean, these are big name, you know, big name people. And I think that is the issue. But you don't see as many comments on threads like that. You don't see as much shit talk, which is nice. I don't mind that.
Yeah.
I don't mind that. I am not a great Twitterer, so that I don't mind that.
It's not a lot of psychology wars. New school versus old school. Get out of here with your parts work.
Yeah, exactly. No, parts work is good. I mean, that's important stuff.
I love parts work.
I'm fascinated about that guy who's doing that stuff for sure. But I think it's those things, you know, just to. And I hope that changes. It certainly has changed in my career. You know, I still am. I live primarily where I've practiced a lot of my career. So I'll be in a bar and there's people who will yell across the bar, "That's my therapist," or, you know, and then there's people who will dive behind the something at a grocery store and hide from, and no exaggeration, like dive.
What do they think you're going to do?
I don't know. And I'll tell you, these are people that, I mean, I work with them actively. But I always, and it's funny, I even, when I set things up, my first session with people, I always tell them, you know, if I see you out in public, I'll never acknowledge you until you acknowledge me first. And for traders, because most of them aren't local.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing anyone in a brick and mortar anymore. I'll say, you know, if we bump into each other on a Discord or on Twitter or whatever, I'm not going to acknowledge you unless you acknowledge me first, or acknowledge our work together and you acknowledge me first, because, you know, it gives them the choice.
So. Yeah.
But it's unfortunate. I hope that continues to change. I think it has gotten better.
I would think that with like the pushback on like the toxic masculinity probably has something to do with some of that.
It does. Athletes talking about it's made a huge difference.
Oh, I bet.
The first guy I remember was, I don't remember his name. He was a receiver for the Jets, and he talked about being sexually abused as a kid. And that was huge. And a lot of guys talk about depression, talk about abuse, talk about whatever. There's the guys in the NBA talking about it. There's football players talking about it. And I think that helps when someone like with those like stereotypical masculine affectations or whatever, like when they are willing, that does change things.
Yeah.
And, you know, for those out there that are, you know, that work with people like me or any of the more well-known ones, like make it known.
Yeah. You're making yourself like, better.
Hey,
you're not broken.
Yeah, exactly. It's ballsy.
Yes.
It takes balls to get there, to go see someone and get some help. I think that's often missing in the picture is how much guts it takes.
Yes, I agree. I remember I mentioned it in a previous episode, but that first time Rich Friesen came on our program and he wanted to talk to some of my subconscious parts, and like there was a moment there where I could have embraced it or I could have been, no, this is stupid, I don't want to do it. And I, you know, I decided to take the leap, and man, that was about 3 years ago now, I think. And
I gotta listen to that.
I'm glad I took that leap, because the gains have been, even if it doesn't translate all to trading, I think the gains in my personal life have made it all worth it.
I think that's awesome. And Rich Friesen, you know, it's funny. I can't remember if I spoke to him. I think I spoke to him on Reddit or something.
Mm-hmm.
He's awesome.
Yes.
And he's big on mindfulness.
Yep.
And I can't stress enough how important that stuff is. And I'm looking forward. I'll have to check out that episode, because I did not hear that one. So rock on to that. Shout out to Rich Friesen.
before we wrap up, then, if you want to one more time, you want to tell people what you do, where they can find you.
Sure. Sean Sawyer, you can, on the internet, on the interwebs, you can find me at soundperformancepsychology.com. On Twitter, I am Sound.
Sean Sound Psych.
Thank you. I'm Sean Sound Psych. Or if you search Sean Sawyer, the Twitter for my business is Sound Perf Psych, P-E-R-F. And, you know, I do, you, there's free consultations you can sign up for. I work with people one-on-one. I do workshops. I'm in the middle of one right now. There'll be another one in mid-August, I think. And yeah, feel free to reach out and have a chat. And even if you're just looking for a direction or a little info, you know, do the free consult. And
free consults are always worth taking advantage
exactly,
of.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I think it's probably time we let Sean here slam some NyQuil and get some rest. Thank you. Thank you very much for powering through this, making time to record with us today.
I appreciate it. It was fun.
Yeah, if you guys enjoyed today's conversation, you still want more, definitely check out soundperformancepsychology.com. Give Sean a follow on Twitter at SeanSoundPsych, or you can follow the business at SoundPerfPsych. I'll have links for all that stuff. Yeah. I'm not going to try to spell them all out.
Yeah, don't worry.
We'll have all those links in the episode description. Be back soon with another exciting episode. But until then, help a content creator get their wings by liking, reviewing, and sharing this show with your friends or enemies. I don't really care. And have a great day.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only, does not constitute financial or investment advice, and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.